I will present findings from a study that I'm just finishing, funded by NIH, that study that we did in South Africa with a lot of people involved in the study, and of course I'm grateful for all their support. I especially want to mention my co-authors. Vasu Reddy was the PI in South Africa. Kate Collier was the project director, but much more than that, she was heavily involved in the whole study. Tim Lane and Richard Parkers are co-investigators on the study as well. Oh, it works. I have nothing to disclose. Hopefully an interesting talk. I'm going to answer two questions in my presentation. The first one is, well, who are these black South African MSM in terms of sexual and gender identities, and what do their sexual practices look like? And you'll see there's some repetition with what we've seen in the previous two talks. And the second research question, I'm sorry, Bobby, but it's about HIV. Is HIV infection in this population associated with the man's behavioral and identity characteristics? The study is based on two major research activities. We had an ethnographic phase, and we had a survey and HIV testing phase. And in the ethnographic phase, we did in-depth interviews with key informants, 20 key informants. We interviewed 81 MSM. We did observations in commercial sites, and I will explain what these sites are. And we did observations in so-called friendship circles. These men have networks in which they function, and these are called friendship circles. That was the ethnographic phase. And after that, we did a big survey with HIV testing. We recruited men using responder-driven sampling. We had 20 seats in four townships. We had 480 men. And the recruitment was across Tswana. So what is Tswana? Okay, in the left upper corner, you see South Africa on the bottom of the African continent. Pretoria is a town, is one of the three capitals in South Africa, in the north of the country, the northeast. And on the top right, you see the center of Pretoria. That's where most people work. And on the left bottom, you see a map of the city of Tswana. And Pretoria is somewhere on the bottom there, in the red part. And around that, you see a lot of townships. And if you would show a map like that of New York City or Boston, you would think that all these areas are connected and the building goes on and on and on. That's not the case in this town of Tswana, the city of Tswana. And that's a consequence of apartheid, where the white people built townships for the black people and the colored people and the Indian people, far enough from the town, from the actual town, but close enough to get them in for work on a daily basis. And that infrastructure is still there. So the men that we've been talking to are still living in townships. And what these townships look like, you can see on the bottom there, that's actually a very poor part of the townships. After apartheid, the socioeconomic circumstances are changing a little bit, and people are making the nice look houser, and their house look nicer. And you can see that in the middle there. That's what the city of Tswana is. Pretoria, the center, but a lot of townships around that, and that's what we focused on. So what is it like for an MSM or a gay man? Most of our participants called themselves gay. What is it like for a gay man to live in a township? First of all, there are no gay bars. There are no gay organizations. There is a gay organization in Pretoria, but not in these townships. And the only place that they can go to where they can socialize are bars, and bars mostly frequented by straight men, a few women, and that's where they have a part. That's where they can hang out, drink. They usually drink before they go to the bar, and most of these men spend Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night in these bars. Drinking a lot. It's fascinating to see the difference between what these men tell you individually and what they have been observing. It's like you're reading two different stories. What we've been observing is a lot of activity in terms of drinking, fighting. We didn't observe any sex, but we knew that it was going on in the sites where we did these observations. So the observations that we did was in these bars, where our team went out to see what was going on, who was interacting with whom, how were men relating to women, how were the MSM relating to the non-MSM, and did some very interesting observations that I will share with you. So what do these bars look like? Here you can see some pictures of taverns or shebeens, they're actually called in South Africa. These were places where quite often illegal, where alcohol was sold illegally. And on the top left, it's not so clear with this light, but you can see that a lot of people of a lot of these bars have bars behind which the servers are helping, providing beer and other drinks to the men. We looked at the presence of condoms in these bars. Some of these bars have condoms. The government in South Africa distributes free condoms, but a lot of gay men don't like them because they smell, at least that's what they say. And this looks very peaceful. If you would come here Friday nights at, say, 10 o'clock, it's not so peaceful anymore. That means it's overcrowded, a lot of drinking and drinking and drinking. Good. That's the context in which we did our study. And what I want to talk now about is the gendered sexual identities and practices. So, did I skip one? Yeah. What I'm telling you now is based on a few questions that we asked to all the 81 men. We asked them, what words or terms would you use to describe yourself in terms of your sexuality, and what do these words mean to you? And of course, this is a very broad question, so interviewers had to probe. And we gave them a definition of sexuality, the kind of sex you like, who you have sex with, your sexual feelings, etc. We also asked the men, how would you describe your gender, whether you feel more like a man or like a woman? And we asked them what kind of masculine and feminine qualities would you say you have. And then we asked them, do you see yourself as what most people call a real man, or would you say that you're different from most other men in the respective township? And of course, if they said, yes, I'm different, we asked them, in what way would you say you're different? Based on answers to these questions, we developed a typology. And the problem with typology is that you have to fit people into categories, and reality is, of course, much more complex. But we came up with five types of gay men. We had a group of men who were only or mostly attracted to other men and who predominantly identified as gay. But even when people say that they're gay, that doesn't necessarily mean that we know what it means to them, so we have to probe that. And the second category were men who were attracted to men and women. In the first category, we had three subcategories. We had men who see themselves as women and want to be treated as such, the drag queens or the transgenders. Transgender, we would call a lot of these people transgender, but they don't sell. A few of them did, but most of these men didn't call themselves transgender because they didn't have the word. They are gay. And it reminded me of what we saw here in the United States, in San Francisco, for instance, 40 years ago, the transgenders said very proudly, I'm gay. And now they have a separate category, a separate box to fit in. So the transgenders, the drag queens, we had a group of men who saw themselves as more feminine, but still have no doubts about their gender identity. They were men. And then we had what we called the Western gay men. And they basically said, well, we are more feminine because that's what other people think. Not because we think that ourselves, but people perceive us as such. And I use the word Western gay because to me it came the closest to what we think gay men should be like, or how they should look like here in this, in the United States, for instance. In the men who are attracted to men and women, we had two categories. We had the straight men who had no doubts about their gender identity. And these straight men were also having sex with men. And then we had a group of bisexuals. They were often uncertain about what they really wanted. There was a lot of pressure from family to get married. Some of them, I would expect, turn out to be gay. And I know I'm not allowed to say that from Brian, but I think that's what's going to happen. Some will get married and stay in a marriage and probably have men on the side. So this is the typology that we developed. And I want to give you now some examples of expressions of femininity in these men. The first one, for instance, says, and these are exemplary for the kinds of statements the men made in our study. This is a very typical answer for a substantial group of men. There are some people, like I've been approached by many people, and they're thinking that I'm a girl. That's why I say when someone tells me they love me, I tell them, unless if you know my conditions, you know who I am, then it is okay. He actually told stories about being raped, of encountering very angry men who discovered that he had a penis. And so his female body build was for him a reason why he said, I'm more feminine. Another example, first thing is feelings. I'll never have feelings for a girl. I mostly like women clothes. Sometimes I wish I had breasts, or menstruated at least. Those are the qualities I have that make me feel more like a woman. The other side, the masculinity side, this is also a very fascinating quote. This guy says, the gay people that I came across were in skirts. They sort of did not accept me because they would say, I'm not gay enough. On the other side, I would find people who are more like me, who are just gay, men who do not dress in women's clothes. And I found myself leaning towards that. But for me, I see myself as a man, you know. I know I get other gay guys who do not like their penis, for instance, but I love it and I feel like I'm a man. I'm just a guy who is attracted to other guys. So this would be a Western gay man. We were interested in what kind of partners are these men interested in. And I listed them here according to the five categories that we developed. So first we had the men who called themselves gay and who identified as women. They are interested in butch men, not gay like them. Not at all, because these men don't have sex with each other. They want to be taken, and that confirms in a way their femininity. And they have an exclusive preference for receptive anal sex. Then we had the men who saw themselves as more feminine, and they also prefer butch men, and they have a preference for receptive anal sex, although they are a little bit more flexible in terms of sexual roles. Then we had the Western gays, and they were more likely to be versatile. They have sex with each other. They don't want two feminine partners. They are more likely to prefer straight acting men, but will never have sex with straight men. Then we have the bisexual men. They are interested in the gay man, but they shouldn't be too feminine. And they are primarily interested in having insertive anal sex. And then the straight men, these men were labeled by the gay men as after nines. And after nines, in a way, stands for the down low, meaning that after 9 o'clock at night, suddenly they have an interest in a sexual interest in men. And in the morning, it's over, and they actually can yell at you as a gay man and discriminate against you. But comes 9 o'clock, they show their interest. And these men actually are wanted by a lot of, especially the feminine men. So these men are interested in men who see themselves and present themselves as women, and their interest is actually primarily sexual, and they have an exclusive preference for insertive anal sex. So what you see is that there's a conflation of gender and the sexual preferences. And I have some quotes here to illustrate that. And I see that I have to hurry up because we officially have only 5 minutes left. So let's skip this one and go to something that I want to show and probably end with. So I summarized what I have been talking about now in terms of gender preferences and types into a little figure that shows you who is having sex with whom. And it also helps to understand how is the virus moving in this community. So we had the three gay types, the gay, the transgender gay, the drag queen gay, and the feminine gay man. We had the Western gay man, we had the straight man, and we had the bisexual man. So who is having sex with whom? Well, some combinations are very unlikely, and those are indicated with the dotted arrows. And then the straight arrows are arrows that indicate that men are more likely to be sexual partners. These men don't have sex with each other. They, for instance, would say, you don't have sex with your sister. And that's how they see themselves. They see themselves as sister. So in these bars where we did our observations, these men came as a group of feminine gay men, but they were interested in these straight men standing at the other side of the bar. So they don't have sex with each other. So who do they have sex with? They have sex with a straight man. And the sex, in a way, for the straight man, it confirms his masculinity, and for the gay man, it confirms their femininity. Straight men don't have sex with each other. They have sex with women or with a feminine gay man. They also don't have sex with the Western gay man, who do have sex with each other. And actually, they might have sex with gay feminine men, but they will definitely avoid the two effeminate men, and they don't get involved with a straight man. Then the bisexual men, it's probably most difficult for them to find a partner because they are recruiting among the Western gay men. Probably part of it is exploring what it means to have sex with other men, but they will definitely avoid the men that are too effeminate and the men that are straight. So what does this mean in terms of the spread of HIV? If you realize that the men on the bottom are bottoms, they are on the bottom and they prefer receptive anal intercourse, that means that if they get infected, that's where the virus stops in most of the cases, because the transmission from the insertive to the receptive partner is much easier than the other way around. So where does the virus come from? If it doesn't come from these men, it's very likely to come from the straight partner. And in a way, it refers to something that Brian was mentioning about the bridge function that bisexual men have. And here it's the straight men. And my theory about what's going on in these townships is that these straight men are affecting the women and they're affecting the men, especially because the virus doesn't go beyond these gay effeminate men. What does it mean in terms of prevention? I think it's incredibly complicated. In a way, I agree that the women don't appear in this picture at all. How to get to them? The most easy group to reach is the gay men. You can see them, they're out, you can approach them, but why always go to the vulnerable group? And why not go to the men who probably have a lot more power? Much more difficult to reach, what to do with them. A lot of questions that I can answer, and people are indeed thinking about what is the best way of involving these men. A conclusion that I made based on the study at the end, I didn't talk at all about the survey, but that's okay. At the end, what we realize is that it's about HIV prevention, but it's also a lot about sexual education. A lot of these men get involved in sexuality not even knowing what's occurring to them. They have stories about incredibly painful experiences for the first sex, and I know as a gay man, it was painful the first time, but it was also pleasure. And for a lot of these men, it's not pleasure at all, it's really painful, and still they want to have that experience. So there's a lot to do beyond spreading condoms and lubrication. It's also education about sexuality and finding ways to reach everybody involved and helping them to stay safe. Thank you.
Thanks, Teo. I'm so sorry, again, because of Swagata's absence today, I think we were a little more fluid or flexible on the timing and got a little bit shortchanged at the end, and I really apologize because this is amazing. A lot to talk about around the campfire tonight, I think. But before we break, any questions for Teo specifically? Yes.
After all, straight men get infected somehow.
Yeah. A lot of the straight men see female sex workers, and that's possible too. A big piece of the puzzle that's left out.
Well, I don't say that these gay, effeminate gay men cannot infect a straight man, but it's less likely. We know the most effective way to infect somebody is by having empathetic anal sex, but it doesn't mean that if you are the receptive role, you have the receptive role, you cannot affect another.
But Teo, is it the case in the townships that a lot of the straight men would see female sex workers in a variety of different circumstances?
I don't know. We didn't ask.
Uh-oh.
Oh, so many things that you don't ask that you realize when the study is over.
Well, during apartheid, there was so much migration that what about there were like miners' wives that were effeminate men that worked in the mine who would serve as a surrogate wife for the...
There were a lot of marriages in... So men were not allowed to bring their family when they had to work in the mines. It ended after apartheid was over. And what you see indeed was that there were relationships that looked like marriages where one really had the female role and the other person had the masculine role.
That for me is just seeing the impact of apartheid on sexuality like this is really something that I think is incredibly important too. Yeah.
I had the same
question. Okay.
Well, actually, no drugs, but this is mainland South Africa, so if you go to the poor towns, you probably will see a lot more drugs. We didn't see a lot of drugs as well, marijuana, that kind of innocent stuff, but not hard drugs.
But a lot of alcohol.
But a lot of alcohol. Alcohol is the biggest problem.
Is there a lot of migration from town to town?
Well, it's funny that you asked that. We expected that these men were locked up in their township and could, you know, it cost a lot of money to travel. But these gay men are creative and they find ways to get around and they go out where they want to go out. So, yes, they leave their townships and meet in other places. But a lot of drinking. Amazing the stories that you hear. And it's always, what they tell you is, when they drink, they forget the common. I always stick to the common and I drink.
I think we've all heard that before. We've all heard that before. But really, again, as papers now are coming out from your project, I think this is some incredibly important work that, I'm excited to hear more about and see in future studies that you're spinning out from it, right? Including some that are on the back burner right now. So whether it's in India, Bangladesh, South Africa, or Boston, Massachusetts, I think it's complicated, and there's a lot of diversity, fluidity, and things going on. I think that in terms of the work that we do in HIV prevention and public health isn't acknowledged, whether it's because of gender, power, politics, because we haven't developed the right framework for approaching things, whether for, in a community like this that was almost, you know, cut off in a way for so long, and just now having access to the models and theories and approaches that we have for HIV prevention here in the United States, I think we're going to require anyone who says that there's no further work to do, I think is sorely mistaken. But that said as well, I think it's also amazing just to see these different snapshots of same-sex and bisexual experience in other corners of the world to remind us, too, that there's a lot of diversity. So if nothing else, hopefully as a takeaway message from today, you can take that with you. And thank you so much. Again, for those who would like the PowerPoint presentation with the HIJRA participants, again, just the stigma that was experienced by that population and also stigma from healthcare providers, from law enforcement officials, like this, which was sort of our transgender talk in this particular session. I'm sorry we didn't have time to share with you, but I'd be more than happy to supply that with you. And otherwise, please feel free. We're all very accessible. We're all very interested and open to your ideas, and we'd love to hear from you too. So thanks so much for coming in today. Thanks.